Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The Cinema Specialists are back. And today, John and I head into episode number 3 of You Haven't Seen That, where we're going to be talking about 28 Days Later and Sunshine. And for the first time in the history of our show, we have a guest. And he's here. It's Jeff, in parentheses here, True Knowledge. And he is the host of MCU's Bleeding Edge. So very excited to have him over here. And you can see from his backdrop, he is quite a fan of the MCU, which John and I, we wrapped up a lot of our MCU coverage recently. But Jeff, welcome to the podcast. So glad to have you on.
It feels good to be here already. I'm looking forward to getting into this one. We've got some good movies to review.
We do. And I'm actually going to be over with Jeff on Friday on his channel. We're going to be talking Dune Part 2. So make sure you go give... MCU's Bleeding Edge. Sorry, I had like a brain fart. I looked at True Knowledge. I said, go give True Knowledge a follow. No, that's not what you're doing. Go give MCU's Bleeding Edge a follow over on YouTube. Jeff, where else are you? Primarily YouTube channel?
I'll send you some links when we get done with that and everything, right? I'll shoot some links over for you for your description and all that stuff and whatnot. But basically, all of our socials are the MCU's Bleeding Edge, and we're on all the major digital platforms. So you can find us live every Monday night, Wednesday night, and Friday night in the evenings. On YouTube, X, X, Twitter, Twitch, Rumble, Facebook Live, our Facebook page, everything, basically.
Love it. There you go. So, yeah, keep an eye out for those links. Jeff sent them over to me when we wrap up here. I'll throw them in the description of the video. But we got movies to talk about. And the reason we picked these was because Civil War came out this past weekend, and that was written and directed by Alex Garland. And so we decided to go back a little bit and find two written by Alex Garland, which are 28 Days Later and Sunshine. John and I had previously talked about Ex Machina on our podcast when we counted down our top 100 movies. So that's on there. And you can already go find that podcast. 28 Days Later, 2002, bit of a cult classic at this point. And then Sunshine, 2007. This is the one that we are calling the, you probably have not seen this movie. John, you had seen both of them up to this point, mm-hmm. now, right?
You're the only one
because I hadn't seen 28 Days Later and Jeff hadn't seen Sunshine. So, John,
oh, really?
How was the rewatches?
I enjoyed both of his movies quite a lot. I am a pretty big Alex Garland fan for the most part. I mean, obviously, I had two of his movies in my top 100 with Ex Machina and Annihilation. So it was nice revisiting these ones. 28 Days Later isn't really like my preferred genre, but it's very good at what it is trying to do. And Sunshine might be the most underrated science fiction movie of all time.
Very excited to dive into Sunshine. I feel like Sunshine is the mess here. But I got to start this off prior to jumping into what these movies are. And I need to make a huge pitch. John and I are huge proponents of physical media. We love physical media. We go Criterion all the time. Every time there's a 50% sale, I do it. I love physical media. John loves physical media. Jeff, after you tried to find 28 Days Later this week, are you the biggest lover of physical media out there too now?
Well, sort of. I mean, honestly, when I was supposed to review this ways back with Andre's the pop culture guy that comes on our shows as a regular guest, even when I went to Best Buy, like to go try to find it, to buy it, I couldn't buy the physical media copy of it. They didn't have it, right? Now, this is the Best Buy, so they don't have the best DVD selection out there. You know what I'm saying? But that's how desperate I went because I could not find it anywhere. So, you know, it's crazy that to think that I mean, you set a record for me in my life, Phil. I never thought in my life I'd ever watch a movie on Daily Motion until now. I'd forgotten all about Daily Motion. I put some content up on there like six years ago or something. Like, you know what I mean? Whatever, when I first got started, right? You know, but like, it's interesting.
I felt like such an ass. So Jeff and I had scheduled that I would go on Dune Part 2 Friday prior to me sending him what our schedule was. So we had known that I was going to go over there. So then when Jeff saw that we were doing these two episodes, he said, oh, I'll jump on that one. And it just so happened that it was going to be the same week and it was going to be right before we did Dune Part 2. And so I was like, okay, 28 Days Later. I had actually never seen 28 Days Later until this go around here. So I'm excited to talk about it. But I was like, that's a cult classic. That's going to be so easy. Danny Boyle, Cillian Murphy coming off his Oscar win, Naomi Harris, Christopher Eccleston. It's got all these people associated with it. Alex Garland wrote it. Like, this is going to be everywhere. And then I start looking and I'm like, oh shit, I'm in trouble.
I don't know why I didn't warn you about the problem with not being able to find it, because we just didn't review it that one time we were supposed to do it. We just scrapped it.
And I was in trouble because a lot of times I'll try to go to my local library, which is right around the corner from my house, and they have a really good selection, or at least in the Palm Beach system here, there's like 20 libraries, so there's at least one that has 28 Days Later. But I was in North Carolina all week, so when I was laying in the, I'm laying there in the bed with the laptop, I'm gonna go, oh shit. And then luckily I found the Daily Motion link. Now it sucked because every 15 minutes or so you're stuck with the stupid ad, and it was the same ad every time. But then when Jeff texted me, I was like, oh shit, I kind of feel like an asshole being like, hey Jeff, it's on Daily Motion. Did you forget about Daily Motion? Like, what's going on?
I guess so. It definitely surprised me. But the ads weren't that bad. Like, they were duplicitous, right? Like, they were the same ad and they would be repeated over like multiple times. Mm-hmm. But like every once in a while it would let me skip ahead. So that would make it a little bit not so bad, mm-hmm. right? But it definitely took away some of the thunder of the movie. And I haven't watched 28 Days Later in a long time. So I forgot, you know, some aspects of the film probably. It's a good thing I did watch it, because if I tried to come in blind, I don't know how well I would have done.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just have to say, though, like, this is why, for all of you out there who might be Gen Zers who are getting into movies and think, oh, I'll just buy it on a streaming service, or I'll always have a streaming service. Man, there are going to be so many issues over the next 10, 15, 20 years, maybe even sooner, 5 years, 2 years, of movies just vanishing and it being hard to figure out where they are.
It is an exception. I've talked to the people about this. It's one of those weird movies that you just can't. It's like it was on Netflix for a while, right? Mm-hmm. Like you couldn't find it for years on Netflix. It used to be on other streaming services and whatnot. You used to be on Amazon Prime for rent, right? For whatever reason, it's not on there right now. Mm-hmm. You know, but like normally it would be up there. So just it's just the movie's in kind of like limbo almost.
And I feel like what it is that's what you're going to run into, though, is the rights. People trying to figure out who has the rights to what when you get these movies that are produced by one production company, and then you turn around and somebody else buys it, or, you know, a different distributor takes over. These are going to get harder and harder to find. So John over here, yes, he was watching a full screen version, but John, you own the movie, so you had no problem.
Yeah, I mean, it depends if full screen is a problem or not. Because let me tell you, watching a full screen movie that used to be, you know, is formatted for our old CRT films, it feels weird in 2024 doing that. But this is a movie I probably bought on a whim when it was on sale in some bargain bin at, I don't know, some movie store or a record store or something.
It's the kind of movie you expect to be in one of those Walmart $5 for like things.
100%.
Yeah, exactly. And I had it, and it's one that I revisit every once in a while. I haven't in quite some time now, but it was a good rewatch, and I'm just very glad I did have this physical copy, and I didn't have to jump through hoops to find it.
Yeah, no, you're very lucky because, yeah, Jeff mentioned it. It took away some of the thunder. The problem was where the ads were placed was very specifically at 15-minute intervals. It did not matter if they were middle of a sentence, if they were the middle of shooting somebody, if they were the middle of stabbing. It did not matter. You were screwed. But let's actually dive in and let's talk about the movie a little bit here. Jeff, I'll turn it over to you first since you said you'd seen it before, but it had been a long time. What do you think of this movie? One, is a Danny Boyle movie. Two, is an Alex Garland script. And then three, just as really the movie that kind of re-sparked the interest of zombie movies in America, despite not really being a zombie movie.
Well, I want to just put an asterisk on my guest appearance here. I haven't done a double or triple movie review in probably like, I don't know, over 2 years, right? Like, and I was never a big fan of them to begin with, like doing like the triple ones or whatever, whatnot. Like I told you before, Phil, I used to do a couple of them with a creator for a while and whatnot. That was his thing, wanting to do three. So I'm so used to doing them on my shows when we go 2 hours, 3 hours on the reviews. And really break them down from scene to scene and all that kind of stuff and whatnot. I explained to you how our structure is, Phil. Mm-hmm. So, and John, that is our structure on our show. We do have like a long form deal. So I just want to put it out there. I'm going to do my best, but I'm not used to having to summarize, you know, and kind of like break down in big swaths, whole films and all that and whatnot. But I'm going to do my best.
Oh, that's all we can ask for. And don't worry. Hey, if we go a little long, if you're a little long winded on some of your answers, don't feel bad.
Sure.
Let's hear it.
No. So, honestly, for a 2002 film, again, not knowing much about Danny Boyle and where he's at in his career as a director at that point, you know, assuming that that's when he first got started, right? That was back then, I'm assuming.
Trainspotting was 96.
Oh, that's right. He did Trainspotting. I remember really liking that movie when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy that young was like jarring, right? Mm-hmm. It really was. Especially after watching Oppenheimer recently for like the third time or whatever, whatnot and everything, and how much older he looks in Oppenheimer. It's kind of staggering. But honestly, the premise of it. It's really the first time you watch it is when it really hits you the best. This is not a movie for me that holds its luster over multiple plays or whatever, whatnot, and everything, because the angle with like the whole infected and whatnot and everything only plays so well on the first watch, right? Like once you get the gist of them, they're pretty simplistic and everything and whatnot. And like, you know, it's not that complicated, right? And they're not that interesting. That their version of the dead or whatever, whatnot in this movie, they're not that interesting. They don't do anything really that interesting. They're just fucking monsters, pardon my friend. You know, they're monsters and whatnot, screaming, you know, running around, biting people's blood. When they puke blood and whatnot and all that, I like that. Anytime you see them puke blood on people and shit and whatnot, I'm like, hell yeah. I'm all about that. I think that looks really dope. But overall, I'd say as far as the writing goes, it's just this. The writing is solid. It has a very contained you know, story with a very, it doesn't have any characters, really main characters. Mm-hmm. There isn't a lot of heavy dialogue. It's really all the acting that really pulls off. It's the acting that itself, like on screen and whatnot and everything, especially the way that it's shot. That makes it what it is. That, and then the factor of the fact of the whole infection, the infected, right? Mm-hmm. During a time period before The Walking Dead, you know, where we were at that point with the zombie genre. Right. So I think that the 28 Days Later probably definitely set a precedent and probably rejuvenalized a little bit and whatnot, and probably maybe even sparked to some extent an interest for something like The Walking Dead to get made.
Yeah.
Possible, because it wasn't that successful, I believe.
It was a $6 or $8 million budget and it made over 80 mil. So it was a huge, huge, huge success for all of them. And I think that's why Danny Boyle started to get, you know, bigger movies after this. We see Alex Garland, you know, they let him take the chance with a movie like Sunshine when he writes that. What I find interesting about 28 days later, watching it for the first time in 2024. So it's been 22 years since this movie came out. It's known as the fast zombie movie. That's what everybody talks about it as. It's the movie where the zombies aren't just sleepwalking, coming after you. They're fast. They're all over the place. And then after I watched it, I started reading about it. And Danny Boyle and Alex Garland are very passionate about it's not a zombie movie. It's about a virus. It's about this rage thing. But everybody calls it the fast zombie movie. And now I actually think what's the strong points of this movie are the direction. I really appreciate the style, the cinematography, the way it kind of shoots like a documentary almost, or at least that's how they're trying to make it seem at parts where it's really gritty, a lot of grain in the shots. But the weaknesses are now I've seen 28 Days Later probably a dozen or more times done so much better than this version. And there's nothing in this version that ends up flipping it for me that says, man, that's why you got to keep coming back to this one. But John, do you disagree with that or agree?
I think you're hitting kind of the nail on the head here with this. This is kind of the progenitor for that resurgence we saw in the aughts of the zombie genre in general. This film comes out in 2002. It's incredibly successful. The Walking Dead comic starts the following year. And then 2004, we have Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead, which is, again, huge. This huge, massive budget film that has these fast zombies, changes everything kind of we know about the genre from the Romero film, and brings up the popularity of it, where even if you think of the non-zombie imitators, these like horde films were all over the place for that entire decade. And I mean, The Walking Dead is still going in some iteration now. And it all comes back to this movie. Even when we look at the opening scene for The Walking Dead is the scene after like the prologue scene in this movie with Jim waking up in the hospital. It's the exact same thing.
It is. It's hard not to connect that connection when you watch it.
And what I find fascinating, too, is so you mentioned Dawn of the Dead came out in 2004. Shaun of the Dead also came out in 2004. So this movie sparked such popularity in the genre again that it actually made it so that people were spoofing it already and were ready to spoof this genre while also making serious movies about it. So there was a lot more that went into this. Now, I know that they want to be passionate. It's a virus movie. It's not a zombie movie. Jeff, is this a zombie movie?
No.
Okay.
No, it's obviously an infectious disease type of issue. Like, the movie starts off in the lab with the monkey and whatnot and everything, which that is probably one of the best scenes in the film.
It is.
Like, you know, those people are so fucking stupid. Again, part of my French, but the doctor's like, you don't get it. They have the rage. Like, they're just sedated or whatever, whatnot. Like, do not open the cage. Right. Like, and like, you know, for all we know that, like, the dude that what happened right there triggered the main event or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Who knows? But like, they definitely could, like, they definitely very much mimicked that, though, with The Walking Dead, they did without question. They ripped that right off from this movie.
That's really funny. So I've never watched The Walking Dead. My uncle is a massive fan of it, and he goes to all the conventions and everything, and he's met everybody.
It's the same premise. The main character Rick wakes up in the hospital and whatnot, doesn't know what the hell's going on. There's nobody there, right? Like, walks out in the streets. There's nobody around and whatnot. He's yelling for people and whatnot and everything, and then like the first walker walks up to him, and it's like a child, right? Isn't it? I think, John, that he's got to like kill it. From jump, like a young girl. I'm reviewing the Walking Dead spinoff stuff makes me yearn back to the original Walking Dead.
Yeah, because you're doing Walking Dead right now, right?
We just finished The Ones Who Live, the last one of the series that they've made.
Mm-hmm.
We just wrapped up the finale last week. It was a pretty good series. Daryl Dixon, I thought, was better, to be honest with you. Dead City was so-so. You know, but I dropped off The Walking Dead around like season two, like a lot of fans did. When Glenn died, I just kind of I dipped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In terms of Alex Garland, this is something I noticed, and we're going to talk about Sunshine in a bit here. He cannot have a normal third act. His third act always has to be something that you're not expecting to happen, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And I think about his newer movies, Annihilation. The third act of Annihilation is so bizarre. I love it, but it's so out there. It's so weird. Yeah. You think about the third act of, oh my God, what's his Ex Machina.
Ex Machina.
Yeah, that goes a little bit of a different route than you're maybe anticipating it going. The third act in 28 Days Later, I am so unsure if I like it or not when they bring in Chris Eccleston and they bring in the idea that all of the people, all of the military guys, this was sent out to be pretty much like, oh, we're going to procreate. We promised them women. I don't know if I like this or if I don't like it, but it is 1000% not where I was expecting this movie to go.
It's the premise that we get in a lot of these monster movies in general, right? Where the real reflection of the film is always humans are the real monsters. And while, again, like this isn't a zombie movie, it's an infected movie, and it's very clearly, yes, Danny Boyle and Alice Garland are very key at pushing that. Mm-hmm. It's also just pretty obvious based on the fact that it doesn't follow any of the zombie rules. Right, there's none of the zombie mythologies there. You don't have to shoot them in the head to kill them. You can just kill them any which way you decide. And because of that, we get that conversation or that line from Christopher Eccleston's character of, it's just humans killing humans. It's the same thing we always have. And that's overall just the theme of this film. That third act is just so harrowing in a way, because in this instance, you're supposed to believe the military is the one who's going to save you, right? And that's how they're always presented in these monster movies. But they are just so self-interested, and in a not good way. It kind of sends those chills down your spine, just kind of thinking about, oh, this is the only way we can motivate them, because otherwise they were just going to dip.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, Jeff, what do you think about that with this third act and what this one is trying to get at? We'll talk about the rest of the movie, but I feel like the third act is really the different part of this movie compared to other movies of the genre.
When did Cillian Murphy's character get superpowers there in that third act and everything go down and become like just as like and have Black Widow like spy like, you know, ability and whatnot and everything and all that? Like, when did that just kick in for him? You know what I'm saying? Like, when I turn off and all that shit, and I'm like, there's some holes in the story. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's some holes in the writing and there's some holes in the story. And besides the one thing I want to point out besides the third act is it's really cool when the dad picks up the blood in his eye from the birth. That's really great. That was really well done. But in the third act, I just don't know what, like, Cillian Murphy looks awesome. Like, he's all, like, you know, obsessed and shit and whatnot. He's going to save these girls. But, like, how does he get that good all of a sudden? Like, and he's taking everybody out and whatnot and everything. And, like, you know, like, they've got guns. He doesn't even have a gun. He don't even want to use a gun.
And he's taking down military-trained people.
He's got a gun. Yeah. He's not even using the gun, shooting people with it and shit. He's, like, hunting people with his bare hands or whatever.
And I feel like it was trying to go off of the adrenaline and the good guy. It's like, okay, but adrenaline wears off pretty quick when a bullet hits you. So what is going on here? I totally agree with you.
The strategy to it was smart. Releasing the walker, you know, the dead guy, knowing that he would just spread the infection and whatnot and everything and make the place into a mess, right?
Yep.
And it was obvious that the soldiers were really green. Right. Yeah. They were very green. They weren't like tested. They weren't battle tested. They never actually fought or anything like that. They're not very green. Look at the way they would waste ammunition all the time in the film. Like, you know, you'd think that they would covet ammunition. Right. Yet they just like they blast away like it's not even like whatever. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So there's some stuff like that where it's just kind of, you know, you wonder what were they trying to convey to the audience with stuff like this. You know what I'm saying? Does that indicate they were like really green or whatever, whatnot? And like, that's why Cillian's characters are able to come in there and just take them out there at the end, you know?
And that's the thing. Okay. So you brought up the Brendan Gleeson situation where he gets the blood in his eye. And the one thing that I really loved about this movie is how immediate everything is. I think of like The Last of Us. You get bit by this and then it could be days or hours or however long before you actually start turning into a zombie. What I loved about this is he's joking around. He's mad now. He pushes this and all of a sudden blood gets in his eye and it's a matter of seconds. The problem with this third act was they asked the important questions. John, you said it. Christopher Eccleston has the line of, you know, we're just humans killing humans. It's how it's always been. The problem for me was the third act was also when this movie stopped feeling like it was unique. And maybe that's because we've seen this done so many times now and a lot of we're copying 28 Days Later. But I haven't seen a lot of what was – okay, I get like you were talking about The Walking Dead. But I haven't seen a lot of like how the infection spreads so quickly. Mm-hmm. I hadn't seen a lot of like, you know, the dad with the daughter. That hadn't been a thing yet. It is now, and it's so overblown at this point where there's a kid and there's the savior and the savior has to die. And then they have the question of what do we do with the kid? But the third act of this is where, because it just turns into this weird kind of action movie, I started saying to myself, why? I don't understand mm-hmm. why it's becoming this weird sort of action movie. And I agree with you, Jeff. I wanted to know. For part of it, I was like, did he get bit by this thing and somehow he's just like immune and he has better rage? But was the message supposed to be the rage of humans is bigger than the rage of this virus? Because that certainly wasn't the case as all of England got wiped out.
Well, they clearly were trying to make some kind of connection in the, with some kind of duality or something like that when that was gouging the guy's eyes out there at the end, right? Everything with their bare hands. That was clearly like a and then making sure that he had to have his shirt off the whole time with the blood smeared all over it, whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then have actually have Selena, who's a really great character in the movie. She's really strong throughout every arc. Really, the actress did a really great job. Where even she doesn't know who the hell he is, right? Like, is going to attack him. I'm not sure what they were trying to do with that. Sorry about that, John.
No. I agree with you. I think there's this desire for a greater symbolism here, and I think there is a bit of like an anti-militarism to it and all, but it's lost in the fact that it almost happens too quickly, where this last segment of the movie is like what, 20 minutes of this 2-hour movie where we finally get the military and everything and we're going through everything. Jim finds out that they plan to use the woman. And that's the entire thing, and then he is opposed to that, which gets him sentenced to death, and then conveniently this guy like shoots wrong and he's able to hide in the body of
I really had a problem with that. Sorry, I have to say this.
That was pathetic.
That was bad, especially when Brendan Gleeson gets shot in boom boom boom, he's dead, boom boom, boom. Like everything is so smooth up to that point. Why am I supposed to believe that suddenly he can't shoot shit?
It's just there's this little bit of discontinuity with it all, and it almost feels like the Alex Garland and Danny Boyle didn't know how to finish the film. It's like they had the ideas, but they didn't know exactly how to do it. Now, granted, this is one of the first scripts, if not the first script that Alex Garland wrote. So it's understandable as he would progress. And I think like this is a problem we see in Sunshine too, in my opinion, despite how much I love that film. Like there are fatal flaws in that movie. But it needed a little bit more connectivity. And I think that connectivity that's really lacking in this is true character development and relationship building. Well, because everyone's circumstantially together and there's a little bit of building there, but it never gets deep enough to really feel like you're rooting for any of these characters.
So I want to ask this then. As I was watching this time, I love the opening scene. And because I've never seen The Walking Dead, I love he wakes up, he goes out, there's no one there. Yeah. He goes into the church because he's, you know, what's going on? He shoots and then he starts getting attacked. You're like, oh shit, this is a great first 20 minutes. I love Naomi Harris as an actress. I love Brendan Gleeson as an actor. I think they're both phenomenal in this movie. But my question becomes, were they able to get away with the fact of course, we'll just pick up this guy because we're you know, he's not infected. So now he's like our buddy and he's going to follow us around. Were they able to get away with that trope just because this was so new in 2002? Because I was a little shocked that there wasn't more to the the development and the relationships between these characters. So I'll just kind of pose that to both of you, because I thought there were cool intros to the characters, but I was surprised that there wasn't more to why they all kind of partnered up, or however you would say it.
It's convenience. If you think about it, it is plausible, like how they all come together. As it plays out, it does seem like something that would be tangible in this world, in this landscape that's been laid out. Right. I mean, think about it. Cillian Murphy's character, meets the group initially just by happenstance, because he just doesn't know what the fuck's going on. Right. They are attracted to the father and the daughter because of they see the Christmas lights or whatever the fuck they have up in their apartment and shit and all that. Right.
Yep.
They have the whole fake signal that brings them to the military base. So it all makes sense. You know what I mean? Well, of course who wouldn't follow a beacon like that to a military base and whatnot when you're living like they are? Mm-hmm. I just think that, I don't know. I don't really have that much to really add to you on that question. I'll let John have more time.
I think what it comes down to is this idea of survivalism. And that's really what the film's trying to emphasize, is the fact that the desire to survive is what's driving these people. And because we don't focus on the character backstories, in fact, when you think about it, we don't get backstories for like any of these characters.
The only thing we know is that Cillian Murphy has parents and that his parents killed themselves. That's
Bike courier.
He got hit. And I thought that was going to come up as like, something else, and it didn't.
Yeah. But the only character we get a backstory for is Mark, who Salida kills like right away when they're in the parents' house because he gets infected. Mm-hmm. And it's a very pivotal scene in the movie. But when he is describing what happened at Paddington Station, like that feels like some of the best writing in this movie, because it feels like we're actually establishing this world. We're establishing exactly what happened, but we're experiencing it as the best thing about Jim's character is he is this audience surrogate, where it's like you're dropped in the movie, figure it out. And I think that's why the third act doesn't work as well, is because he's supposed to be our audience surrogate, and then he's all of a sudden John Rambo.
Mm-hmm. Right? And Jeff, you have the Last of Us poster behind you there. So a video game like The Last of Us, you'd play the scene, you'd get a cut scene, you'd play the level, you get a cut scene, you play the level, you get a cut scene. This movie felt like it was doing the video game thing. Now, I know in 2002, you weren't getting it to that level necessarily, but it did feel like it was doing the video game thing a little bit of walk around, get in the world, start to have an action sequence, run into a character, here's your cut scene. Now let's quickly start moving again. And that's kind of how this plays. I think my biggest problem with The Last of Us show is that I think they tried too many episodes for something that probably could have been made into a movie or could have been made into a miniseries. So I think that it was a couple too many episodes there, but it plays that same way where every single episode, it feels like you're playing the level of a video game and this is how it's going. I think with 28 Days Later, it's funny. I gave this 3 stars out of 4, but I think I was leaning 2.5 for most of the movie. And I think that I allowed like other people's notions of it and the fact that I had to watch it on Daily Motion to help me give it an extra half star. But that's how it felt, as I was honestly a little surprised, because I was 10 years old when this movie came out. People loved this movie when it came out. I mean, this was like the cool thing when you got into high school, everybody would talk about it. I was a little surprised that this was really it, because when we talk about Sunshine, which we're gonna do in like 5 minutes, when we talk about Sunshine, whether you love or hate that ending, it's going to make you have a discussion pretty openly about like, what the hell did I just watch? For 28 Days Later, I walked out of that and I was like, yeah, okay. Beginning, middle, end. It checked all those boxes and I've seen it before. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'm being too harsh on it, but that's where I'm at. So either one of you.
The end scene with the whole blanket saying like, hello, whatever, whatnot, did not have to be in the movie. They could have ended the movie like with them just like, and like they figured it out from there, from like the base. You know what I'm saying? Well, not, they didn't have to be there, but they did do it. I guess for some people, it maybe it played. For me, it was kind of like a little overdone, I guess.
Can I, I don't mean to interrupt you, but can I jump in with this real quick? I think that if this comes out 3 years later, I don't think they have that scene. And I think it ends right after everything. I think that they did that because I think there was a bit of, there was more optimism when this movie was being made and people wanted a little more closure. Cause I think about Children of Men, which came out 4 years after this, one of the most haunting final shots in the history of film, and so much more effective than actually seeing them get rescued or something like that. So I 100% agree with you, Jeff. So go ahead.
I thought The Last of Us was really good, by the way. I thought it was one of the best shows that I reviewed last year. And I really enjoyed a lot of the episodes. I thought that the acting performances by the girl that played, what's her name?
Bella Ramsey. Yeah.
Bella Ramsey from Game of Thrones. She played, that crazy character in Game of Thrones that,
the bear daughter. What was her? Mormont.
Yeah. She took out the ogre or whatever, there. Yeah. And at the Battle of Winterfell, the Dark Knight episode, it was good. But I know I liked her. Like, I like Pedro Pascal and his role too. But no, that's pretty much it. All I really got. I'll probably give the movie 3.25 stars out of 5.
Okay, so you're about the same. 2.5 out of 4. I was going the 4-star system because I feel like that's like what Ebert did. So that's what I stick with. I feel like with movies, I always go 4, even though Letterboxd really wants me to do 5, really badly wants me to do 5. So we're all on kind of the same page here.
Yeah, I also gave it 3 stars. It's, I think a lot, and I was leaning towards that 2.5 mark. And I think what it comes down to with this movie is you kind of have to acknowledge the legacy it did have. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. And the fact that it's Alex Garland's first full script. I mean, he wrote the novelization of The Beach prior to this. And it's an early movie for Danny Boyle. And Cillian Murphy is now an Academy Award winner. Like, it really did springboard a lot of careers and an entire genre that lasted for 15 years following this movie.
Yeah. All right, well, let's jump over to Sunshine because I do feel like Sunshine is the one that the three of us are more excited to talk about. And if you haven't seen Sunshine, watch Sunshine. Do yourself a favor and go check this movie out. We're going to spoil the shit out of this, so get ready. But if you are sitting there saying to yourself, I've never even heard of Sunshine, which I'm sure a lot of you haven't, check this out because I'm just going to list off the cast real quick. And then I'm going to turn this over to Jeff because I know this was the first time Jeff had seen it. And John and I had both seen it already. So first, I'm just going to list this cast for anybody who is at home and has never heard of this. Cillian Murphy, Rose Byrne, Chris Evans, Cliff Curtis, Michelle Yeoh, Hiroyuki Sanada, Benedict Wong, Troy Garrity, and Mark Strong. It's absolutely ridiculous how good this cast is. This was my second time watching it. John, how many times had you seen it?
This is also my second time watching it.
Second time. Okay. So we'll get into our second time viewings. But Jeff, this was your first time, right?
Yeah.
What did you think of this one?
I had no idea. It's such a great cast. I really enjoy several of the actors and actresses that are in this. I really like Rose Byrne. Mm-hmm. Is that her name?
Yeah,
I like her. I really like... Cliff Curtis. I like him. I like Michelle Yao a lot. And Chris Evans is great in the movie. I really like Chris Evans and he's outstanding. Hiroyuki Sanada from Shogun is in it.
Yep.
Gotta give that guy respect, man. He's Hiroyuki Sanada, right? He's fucking dude is nasty. He's sick in Shogun too, man. You want to talk about a good show, Phil? Shogun is like on another level.
I gotta watch it. It's killing me because it's on Wednesdays, which is when Survivor's on. So
Benedict Wong, that plays Wong in the MCU, is in the movie, right? Like you can't go wrong. The only thing I thought was just that, like, I didn't like them bringing in the like supernaturally, like somehow alive get captain from the other ship, shit or whatever, whatnot. Like, where the fuck did he come from? How did he get through the space and shit, and whatnot? What the fuck was going on with him?
And this is probably. So
why is it every time he came near to somebody, like everything looked distorted and all that shit and whatnot?
And this is what I think is so fascinating about Sunshine. Mm-hmm. Every single person has the same exact opinion of this movie, which is it is absolutely incredible. And then the third act comes and you say, okay, do I like that or do I not? What is really going on here? And this is what I was talking about with Garland. He can't just have a normal third act. Yeah. You think the third act is going to be okay. They're going to go in. They're going to do this. No, he has to go get the other ship, have it be a survivor, and not just a survivor. Not like Matt Damon in Interstellar where you find out he's just a scumbag. It's no. This has to be a guy who now is supernatural, burn victim, just been like almost becoming a god because of the sun. And you say to yourself, does that really come across entirely?
Is he supernatural?
Well, that's a good question because I don't think there is any supernatural elements to this movie. I think it's just this guy's delusional. Like he has lost his mind. And I think it is actually.
How did he manage to get through? How did he manage to even get on that ship?
So he was the one who went through the when the explosion happens, he causes that explosion.
Oh yeah, no, I know it was him that caused the explosion. Yeah,
and it was like after he got through, he did it so that he could take over the other ship, and he thought that would just kill the others off. That was pretty much what the whole thing was with mm-hmm. that. So I guess supernatural is the wrong word, but it's like he's almost become a godlike figure. It's an unexplainable kind of thing because it's like you said, Jeff. The camera angles and the shots when he's on screen are not normal, which I think is supposed to unsettle you, which it certainly does. But is this another one that got almost too Hollywood of an ending, or does this one work better for you all?
I don't know. I love seeing his arm get ripped off and everything and whatnot. That was crazy. There's so much to talk about in this film. The ending is really good. I mean, The chemistry between the cast is solid all throughout the film. It's a very compact film, very well written. It doesn't have that many holes. Unlike 28 Days Later, there's not many holes in this film. It plods forward, you know, throughout the film and whatnot and all that. It moves forward even when stuff does get kind of silly, like with the captain guy and whatnot and everything. Right, like they move right on. You know, and like they get your attention on other stuff. The deaths that occur, whatnot, are plausible. The stuff makes sense, kind of, to some extent. It just there's a lot of really good cinematography, really good space shots. The use of like the sun as an image, mm-hmm. you know, and also as like a weapon, right? Yeah. And like you know, and such a catalyst to the whole movie and to the whole theme of the story is deep. You know what I'm saying? And they did a great job with the ending. They nailed it by showing the sister with her kids. Oh,
Sydney Harbor. That shot's absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
And okay, so we were talking about with 28 Days Later. I think 28 Days Later and Sunshine, the first two acts, they go the way they have to go, right? Like we've mm-hmm. seen enough movies of these two genres that, you know, 28 Days Later, he has to wake up, he has to go, he has to find another group of survivors. That needs to get broken up. Then there's more, and then they get broken up, and then finally they find their big bad. And Sunshine really follows the alien format. They're here, they're out in the middle of nowhere, they get the distress signal, that sends them off the beaten path, and leads them on a journey that they weren't necessarily meant to be a part of. And that's what sets all the problems going, right? It's mm-hmm. now there's problems because he forgot, Benedict Wong's character forgot to adjust the shield. And so now there's issues with that. Then that, even though they think they figured that out, now they have the issue with the garden and all these things. So it's a very similar format mm-hmm. to a movie like Alien. And yet this one to me feels so professionally and well done just from start to finish of the necessary steps where mm-hmm. I'm sitting there very compelled and I feel like it's unique enough.
Yeah, I agree. I think it spends so much time focusing on things that could just go wrong as you're trying to travel to the sun. And that's where I really think Alex Garland's script shines here because our introduction to these characters, every single character has a very specific role. They have a very specific reason they're on this mission. It's shown as they do everything. And through their conversations, you get an idea of the first like 15 minutes of this movie sets up this entire cast so well. And then once things do start going wrong, you see where the mistakes are being made based on these people in their roles. And you see where their importance comes from. And when Benedict Wong's trait messes up, doesn't set the shield, it doesn't adjust the shield to their new adjusted trajectory, it kind of starts the ball rolling on everything going wrong at that point. And you still have Chris Evans's Mace blaming Cillian Murphy's character the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because he is the physicist who said, no, a second payload is worth it. And as we progress through the movie and it gets to the point where they can't even get the second payload, it just puts all these questions as to, was everything we just went through worth it? Mm-hmm. When all we had to do was complete the mission. It's so expertly done, and it feels like they just needed that little bit more to keep it going. And Alex Garland decides to go this like slasher route. Mm-hmm. And normally I would say like this is a third act problem, but it's not, because in all honesty, there's like 10 minutes of this movie that I'm not a fan of. And it's the 10 minutes, right? As soon as they realize that, Cillian Murphy's character meets Mark Strong's character, there's like 10 minutes there where I'm like, okay, I'm not buying this. But then it goes right back into it. We get back in after Michelle Yeoh's killed, and we are left with Chris Evans trying to get the mainframe back into the coolant. And mm-hmm. we have Cillian Murphy trying to get out of the airlock he's now locked in. All of that's still super compelling. It's just this one 10-minute stretch where all of a sudden we get a scene from Alien or like the Velociraptors in Jurassic Park. Like that chase sequence with Mark Strong is just like, okay, this isn't necessary. This human adversary isn't necessary. But Mark Strong's character also feels like this natural conclusion to what Cyril, the psychiatrist, is being set up to the entire movie.
The entire movie. I do agree with that. Jeff, what do you think about really any of that? I mean, because what was your takeaway as you were watching this? Did this go the route you were expecting, or what'd you think?
Sort of, yeah. Like, it became pretty apparent there. I'm not sure at what junction, but it became pretty apparent that they were going into suicide mode there pretty quick. Mm-hmm. For a while there, you're thinking that they're going to be able to come back, but then pretty quickly it becomes obvious that, like, you know, the one thing that they do I can see how that would take away from the film is they borrow tropes from other space films, whatever, whatnot, mm-hmm. right? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like the whole distress signal deal and all that and whatnot, mm-hmm. right? You know, having a crew member pop up on the show that wasn't there before, kind of shit. They've just been dumb too. You know what I'm saying? Right? Like, you know, yep. like that kind of trope. I've seen that before too. Mm-hmm. But overall, just the story itself is very intriguing. That anytime that you bring people into these space films where they're all contained and you're all inside the ship, the characters have to interact well. There has to be good chemistry throughout, you know, between them to fuel the film, right? To like, you know, make it work. And they do work as a team and whatnot in this film, the characters, I think. And I think Chris Evans really shines in this film. I think he really does. I think that he's a very heroic. And he knows how to handle things in stressful situations better than anybody on the crew. Right? Like when it comes down to it, when shit gets rough, he's the one that like knows how to push forward and whatnot and make decisions and whatnot and all that, and like is clear headed. Right.
Yeah. He's willing to make the hard decisions that nobody else wants to make, even though he is the one earlier on in the movie who says, well, we don't need to go over there and get that second payload. It's probably not worth it. And then as the movie goes on, you see him start saying, you know what, screw it. I'm just going to make the decisions because I realize that's the situation we're in. Chris Evans is the one that shocks me in this, because when you look at this, I mean, what's funny about a movie like Sunshine Now is you have two Oscar winners in it with Cillian Murphy and Michelle Yeoh. You have Mark Strong, who's, you know, always, I mean, he's great in everything he's in, even though he's barely in this movie. Rose Byrne, she was hot for a little while there when she was popping up in movies like Insidious, Bridesmaids, Neighbors, Spy. Like she was more comedic. She wasn't necessarily going to win Oscars. But for Chris Evans to kind of steal the show from everybody else, which was helped by his ridiculous haircut in the first 5 minutes of this movie, I really was impressed, and I really enjoyed that element. And that his character, which could be the throwaway character, you know, he's the hot-headed whatever guy that you could just say, eh, we're gonna get rid of him. I thought that worked really well. And you see the range of emotions more with his character than you probably do with any other character in the movie.
Yeah, and for him to finish his journey in this with like the heroic sacrifice in the end, which is ultimately is just enough for them to be able to accomplish their mission. It feels like a really, it's a well-written character. It's acted really well by someone who up to this point had been in the two Fantastic Four movies and what, not another teen movie?
Yeah, he wasn't doing well. He was
another one too. He did that other like action film or whatever, whatnot, where he was over in Japan and he has like superpowers and shit like that and whatnot.
I don't know that one.
Push. I think that came out just a little bit later.
Oh, yeah. Was it a little bit later?
I think it came out like 2 years later.
Oh yeah, Push was 2009. I'm looking at it right now.
If you think about Captain, this would have been. You can see where this movie probably played into the casting of him as Captain America.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And then you get him in Scott Pilgrim versus the World in 2010. Mm-hmm. And then he does Captain America in 2011. So you are getting him in like these side cool guy roles, but he does have the Captain America look. I mean, it really makes sense. And I always said when we were going through our MCU movies, Jeff, I always said that I think the Captain America ones are the ones that hold up the best out of any in the franchise. And I think a lot.
Oh, I just watched Captain America Winter Soldier the other day for a review with Andres over there on his channel. And I'm telling you, it holds up, man. It's a good ass movie, yeah. Winter Soldier.
Yeah, it's I have that as my favorite one, John? I have to look at mine.
I think there's Avenger is your favorite one.
There's with Chris Evans in this movie where like literally he sounds like Cap.
He does.
Yeah,
he does. He really does. What do I have? I got to find it. I do have the first one and then Winter Soldier. I have as my second. So my top two movies in the MCU are the first two Captain America movies. But okay. But when you, so we're talking about all the different characters, all the different, you know, they all kind of, it kind of has that vibe of Alien where you don't have one main character. Everybody kind of has their own role. They all have their own purpose. They're all doing their own thing. The other thing in this movie, though, that really stood out, the special effects I felt like really were good, considering this was 2007. There's movies from that same time that went too heavy on the CGI that look really bad. I mean, I watched an HD on my big TV today. Jeff, with this being your first experience with it, did you find that it helped, that it looked solid from a visual effect?
The shots of the ship at times in the beginning, I thought looked a little, could have been better. But other than that, the CGI and everything looked really good and everything and whatnot. The space shots were good. The ship shots were good. I thought they did a good job with they really spent a lot of time to make the detail look good with the ship.
I really appreciated too, like the scene where Rose Byrne and Chris Evans are in the middle and they're watching the screens of the captain, Sonata, and then Killian Murphy out on the whatever. And you get the shots from inside their helmets where it's on the sides of the screen. And Rose Byrne and Chris Evans are actually in a different ratio because it's almost like we're watching on the screen that they're watching on. I thought that was so damn cool. I know it's not CGI, but I just feel like this is a really cool, good-looking movie that 17 years later – any movie with CGI or with special effects and stuff, that's the first thing you generally start to notice as falling apart. And I didn't notice it really much with this movie.
No, that's a really good shot. I like that too. When they pulled that up and whatnot and everything, of course, Hiroyuki Sanada had to go first before everybody. You know?
He's the samurai, man. He had to fall on the sword, man. He had to do it. It was great.
But that's such a huge moment. I think it's, and it is a trope in these type of movies, and not just, I don't think it's just limited to space exploration movies. It's also a very like ship oriented theme where the captain has to go first, and that kind of starts the ball rolling on the crew kind of turning on each other. That sequence where they're repairing the solar shield is so tense. And because we see the fire catch in the O2 garden, we see Michelle Yeoh's character just running there, and you know someone is about to die, but it could be literally any person of this cast, and you have no idea how it's going to happen. And then Chris Evans is like, okay, we're going to flood the oxygen tanks into the garden. And you're like, okay, Michelle Yeoh is just going to blow up here. And then in the end, it's Sonata finishing what needed to be done to save the crew and sacrificing himself to do it. I watched this movie with my roommate who had never seen it before. There are so many painful deaths in this movie. And I don't know which one's the worst. But being instantly burned up by the power of the sun has to be up there as one of the worst.
It's either that or the freeze when Harvey freezes to death and then bounces into the part of the ship and literally breaks apart like ice would. Jeff, if you were going and you were having to rank these, how would you rather go here? Would it be getting burned to death by the sun that close to it, or just freezing the way that Harvey went?
I want to get burnt by the sun.
Okay.
The freezing shit, like, it would look like it would hurt longer.
Yeah, it seemed like he had more time to really experience every second of what was happening to him with the freezing.
Yeah,
I don't know if I really want to mess with all that. I prefer to get burnt, probably. I think it seems quicker.
Yeah. And it really leans into when they're showing the deaths with the sun, and even with Cyril's character, who I think is very interesting in this movie, where he's like become infatuated with the sun. As they get closer, it's like he can't believe it. And you know, he's getting burned, and you see him having to peel parts of his skin off because he's just getting the sun poisoning so bad. And then when Kaneda dies, that's his character's name, you see, like, it is almost a godlike situation again of like he's seeing God by being burned by the sun. They do it very beautifully rather than graphically. And
they do the Event Horizon video scene with the video with the crazy captain and all that shit and whatnot, like Event Horizon and shit almost.
Yep. Absolutely. And the biggest takeaway, because we were just talking about it with 28 Days Later, Jeff, you were saying you didn't like the ending of that movie. I feel like this movie, even though it does have the positive last like epilogue here, it definitely ends more the way that these mid-2000s movies were, which is more pessimistic. And it's even like, okay, they did all this, but is humanity really going to come all the way back? And everybody on that ship had to die. Because, Jeff, you were talking about it where you were, you know, at first you were saying, oh, maybe they will live. And then it becomes very apparent very quickly that they're not going to. That was so much of the mid-2000s with these types of movies, because it was everybody had to go. There had to be no hope for the characters you just spent all your time with. It became a big time trope. And it's almost like Alex Garland and Danny Boyle learned that together after making 28 Days Later 5 years earlier. And they wanted to go with the darker version of the ending for this type of movie.
Well, they sell it well. It doesn't, the deaths don't seem unnecessary. They do make logical sense, right? You've got Penbender or whatever, whatnot out there killing everybody there at the end and all that, right? Like the deaths from the airlocks, you know, type stuff and whatnot, this from the sun shield stuff and whatnot with Hiroki, right? It was all justifiable. The worst death was probably when Michelle Yao's character got stabbed in the back.
I agree with you.
That probably sucked the worst.
Mm-hmm. It didn't feel like there was a story purpose to it. Go ahead, John.
I agree, but at the same time, it's still this beautiful moment of Corey finding this one remnant of the garden in all of the ash. And I think that the symbolism of her finding that one piece of life right as hers is taken away is really powerful. But again, this is that like short segment of this movie that I don't like, because I agree. It just seems unceremonious compared to the other deaths that we've seen to this point. And that I would even say that includes the off-screen suicide of Benedict Wong's character.
You don't like that? You don't like that?
No, I do.
Oh, you do. Okay, sorry.
I don't like the slasher aspect of this movie.
Yeah,
that's the.
I love the Benedict Wong reveal when they finally determine like we're gonna have to go kill him, and they give him the heroic exit. Even though, I mean, it's like heroic is maybe too strong of a word, but I feel like they really do. He's trying to redeem himself the best way he can, and he also can't live with the guilt. Mm-hmm. I thought that was so much better than Chris Evans walking over and being like, "All right, buddy, time to go." Well, that was pretty badass.
Yeah, because that would have been rough to have to see that scene where he had to kill him.
Yeah. And I actually think it's better for the movie that this crew always sticks together. They're butting heads, but they're not then turning on each other. They turn on each other through verbal assault, or we see the one part where Cillian Murphy and Chris Evans fight it out. But it doesn't allow itself to become that corny situation. I always say, Jeff, have you seen The Descent? The Neil Marshall movie with the girls who go spelunking, the women who go spelunking.
Yeah, I have.
So I always say what I find to be, that's one of my favorite horror movies of all time. And I think what makes it so incredible is that they went with an all-female cast, because you don't get into the corny love stories, the fake sacrifice. Oh, I got to go do this so I can save the one I love. It doesn't allow itself to fall into those tropes. It's just pure survival. And I think that's what's great about this movie is the characters. Yeah, Rose Byrne and Cillian Murphy have a little bit of a relationship going on, but it's not dwelled on. And it's very much that everybody is doing what they need to do. And they, even though they're disagreeing with each other, they're not willing to put each other at risk just for the sake of plot development. Or
it's a very compact film, Phil. There's no time for any of that. There's no room. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's no space for it in the writing and whatnot, and in the story and whatnot, and all that and everything from scene to scene. There is no room. Where would you even put in a romance?
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think, but I think, Phil, you make a really good point, because there are multiple points in this movie where they say, hey, we need three of us to die in order for us to finish the mission. And they're still not willing to do it.
Yeah.
And then it's interesting when we get to the end and we do get that conversation about whether or not to kill Trey. And Cillian Murphy's character says it, right? You want me to weigh one life against the entire human race? Like, it's a no-brainer. That's just the brilliance of this film, I think, is that it doesn't try to sidestep these moral questions and these ideas. Right. And it takes a stance on what the correct response is. And then it's almost like taken away from them when they see that he's already done it himself.
That the way that Cillian Murphy delivers the line of kill him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why more Hollywood directors did not realize what an amazing actor this guy was and why it took so long for him to start getting these massive roles. Because when he says, you want me to weigh one life versus all of mankind, and the way he just looks and so nonchalantly just says, kill him. It is so damn brilliant. And it's not the over explanation. It's nothing silly. And the delivery is just perfection. It honestly gives me chills as I'm sitting here talking about it now. So good on Cillian Murphy for that one. And good on Alex Garland for just writing the line in that way. You know, he nailed it. What else on this movie?
I think there's a really important aspect of this film. And that's the fact that we never, despite the fact that it's kind of like hinted at these ideas of like the sun having like extraterrestrial or god powers and allegories and everything like that. Even when we get Mark Strong's character coming in as this sun poisoned man who is out to stop everyone because he wants to be the last man alive at the end of time. It never crosses the boundary into that crazy supernatural extraterrestrial thing that we see so many science fiction movies do. I mean, even when you think about the ending of 2001 A Space Odyssey, the ending of Interstellar, right? We get those trippy sequences, Event Horizon, all of those space movies. They have those trippy sequences at the end. Yes, we get the payload scene where, you know, gravity's a little different and they're on the cube and whatever. We don't get some trippy sequence where time's being distorted because of how close they are to the sun or anything like that. It all stays very linear the entire time. And I think it's the right decision for this movie.
What do you think about that, Jeff?
Agreed. Right.
Yeah.
Agreed, 100%. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one of those movies that I wish more people would go back and take a look at. And I wonder if with Murphy winning his Oscar, if that will help.
I hope so.
Danny Boyle is a weird director for me because Danny Boyle did Trainspotting. Then he does 28 Days Later. Then he does Millions, which is like a family comedy. Then he does this movie. Then he does Slumdog Millionaire. And then he does 127. He's all over the map. And he pretty much everything I've seen by him, I have enjoyed. But I'm just saying Danny Boyle is very much all over the spectrum here when he's making his movies. And so I wonder if that hurts with a movie like Sunshine, because the cast is impeccable. It's written by one of the hottest writers in Hollywood right now. And it's directed by a guy whose name might not mean as much now, but who does have a massive filmography that if you're going through Best Picture winners, you're going to be able to view his filmography. If you're going through cult movies, Trainspotting is going to be on there, and that's going to get you to go through his filmography. If you're going through zombie horror or any type of horror, 28 Days Later is going to get you to go through his filmography. So I wonder if more people will start to experience Sunshine, or if it will unfortunately fall into that, yeah, it's good, but it has a really weird last third, and therefore it's, eh, you could watch it, you don't have to. I wonder what the legacy of this movie will be 15 years from now, even, as it turns 30 or so.
I hope it's a lot more. I hope it's more positive, and I hope more people just watch this movie, because it is, honestly, this is the exact movie that this series epitomized. Like, it epitomizes this series. Like, this is the whole point of this series, is to talk about movies like this. And Sunshine, I think, never got popular because of a few things that happened around the same time. Do you remember the 2004 movie The Core with Aaron Eckhart?
Yeah,
of course. The spoof of Armageddon, as I like to call it.
Hilary Swank and Aaron Eckhart, right? Similar concept. And I think people often equate this movie with that one because of it. And this is a far superior film. I think this movie also came out in 2007. And it takes a long time to get down your list of 2007 movies before you get to Sunshine.
Yeah, we always talk about 2007, Jeff, as like one of the greatest years for film. That was where you had No Country for Old Men. You had Atonement. You had Michael Clayton. There Will Be Blood. And what was the fifth one that was nominated for Best Picture that year? Juno. Those are the five movies nominated for Best Picture. And those probably weren't even like, those weren't necessarily the five best movies of that year, but that's just how that year was just loaded. I'm trying to find it if I can.
Well, Sunlight should make out better than 28 Days Later, since you don't have to watch it on Daily Motion.
That is true. Would think that that would start to help it a little bit here, huh? What are the most popular movies? Zodiac, Ratatouille, Superbad, Hot Fuzz, The Darjeeling Limited, Into the Wild, I Am Legend, Death Proof. Like, these are all movies just from 2007. It's absolutely insane. The Mist, Wreck, REC. Just a loaded year. But what's your, Jeff, because I'll turn this over to you. What is like your biggest takeaway from Sunshine? And how do you feel about, we just did a movie, I didn't purposely do this, but a movie that was directed by the same person and written by the same person. Does the Danny Boyle, Alex Garland duo, because it's not a trilogy, but does it work in your opinion? Like, do they work well together?
It seems like it. And this is what my takeaway would be, that this is a movie I would recommend to other people, you know, like, and say, go watch this. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially because I'm a sci-fi guy. So I know a lot of other sci-fi people, whatnot, and they that like sci-fi films that come on and do our reviews and only want to do sci-fi, right? Like Dune kind of stuff, you know what I'm saying, whatnot. And this is hardcore sci-fi. Like Interstellar is one of my favorite movies of all time, right? So, you know, we're doing Fallout right now with Jonathan Nolan directing, you know, which is pretty cool. But yeah, it's definitely a movie that I will recommend to other people, whatnot, and everything. And I'm glad I watched it. It was really solid, very entertaining.
Now, when you bring this up, and this will kind of be the last thing, and I'll let you all go, but when you bring this up to people, and if you told anybody, I'm going to do a podcast about Sunshine, or if you bring this up, do they generally know the movie? Have they seen the movie? Or are they looking at like you have two heads?
Somebody in the private chat immediately knew who it was and whatnot and everything, and you know, put up a GIF from it or whatever, whatnot, or like a meme or whatever, whatnot, based off the movie and whatnot, right? So, like, yeah, people seem to know what it is.
Okay, so they know it. Some have seen it, some haven't. I feel like that's kind of like the where Sunshine falls. Jeff, what'd you like more, Sunshine or 28 Days Later?
Sunshine.
Sunshine.
Much better film. It's just it's in my genre. It's in my niche with the sci-fi stuff and whatnot. The sci-fi horror angle. Right, I think that Event Horizon is a really good movie for me. It's a classic.
Yeah, you've mentioned Event Horizon a couple times. So as my last question to you, then, because we are like when we did our top 100 movies, the whole point was we were trying to just be like, these are movies that we have a lot of film fans who follow our when we were doing reality TV that would follow it, and they'd be like, what movies do you watch? What are you watching? You'd mention one, and they'd be like, I'm not gonna watch that. So we were trying to give reason to go watch these movies that maybe you haven't heard of or haven't seen. So you've mentioned Event Horizon. What's another one that you think people should really go out and see that they might not have heard of or might not have seen that falls into this kind of sci-fi horror genre?
Oof.
I know I put you on the spot trying to come off the top of your head, but even if there's anything, like, was there another movie other than Event Horizon that really popped into your brain as you were watching Sunshine that you were like, man, I got to watch that, or somebody should go watch that?
Not really. No, I definitely would say anybody who's never gone out and checked out Interstellar should watch Interstellar. That's mm-hmm. that is a damn classic.
Yeah.
The totally different kind of film. You know what I'm saying? Whatnot, you know, but a classic. No, I can't off the top of my head think of another film from that time period or that era that really comes into that same equation. This is something that I would hold up with Event Horizon, like at like a level, right?
Yeah.
With probably a better secondary group of secondary characters in it than maybe Event Horizon did. But Event Horizon had a pretty solid ensemble cast too.
Yeah, I've actually never seen Event Horizon. So you've talked about it a lot. Lawrence Fishburne, Sam Neill, Kathleen Quinlan, and Jolie Richardson. I'm going to have to check that one out because I haven't seen it.
It's out.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, I appreciate you jumping on. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I had a great time talking to you about this.
Oh, definitely. And I'll give you a rating on this. Out of 5 stars, I'll give Sunshine a 4.25.
Okay. So a full star higher than the other. And yeah, I went 3.5 on Sunshine out of 4. And the other I'd gone 3 out of 4. So, and really it was more of like 2.75 on that. But like, I can't put that in the letterbox. So we're almost identical on our taste of these two movies here.
That's always good.
What'd you say that again, Jeff?
That's always good to see. It's nice to see that kind of like closeness with the ratings.
Yeah. And John, what did you go with this one?
I went for the full 4 this time because in all honesty, I think this is my favorite movie that will never make my top 100.
Wow.
I really do. I love this movie so much, but that slasher segment like takes me out of it for a bit, but it brings me right back in. Last time, when I first watched it, I gave it 3.5 stars, but this time around, I was like, I can't deny this anymore. I think this is a nearly perfect movie.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm going to be over on the MCU's Bleeding Edge on Friday night, 9:35 start time. Correct, Jeff?
That's correct, sir.
9:35 p.m. start time. So I'll be over there. What else are you doing, though, Jeff, so that anybody who's listening here who doesn't know who you are can go check you out?
We're covering the Fallout Amazon Prime Video series right now. We're covering Shogun. We've still got 3 chapters of Shogun left to do. We're covering X-Men 97. You know, and that's, you know, we're doing movie reviews. We're doing Doom Part 2 with Phil this Friday, you know. So that's what we got going on basically right now. You know, we just started Fallout. It's been good so far. And like I said, it'll be good to see you on Friday, Phil. I'm enjoying doing the review with you. It'll be good. It was good to meet you, John.
Yes, you too, Jeff.
So, yeah, I'm excited for Friday, and we'll have the links in the description. So make sure you check that out. Also, if you want to be a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. Since we talked about 28 Days Later this week, last Tuesday, our $5 Tuesday was Shaun of the Dead. So if you're really into how zombie movies, or if 28 Days Later got you into the, I know it's not zombie, we just talked about that, but it got you into that mood, you go become a $5 tier patron and you get access to our episodes we put out every single Tuesday. Shaun of the Dead was 2 weeks ago, so you'd still have that. Or actually, that was last week, because Shrek 2 is tomorrow. That's what I'm getting confused about. Yeah, that's right, Jeff. We're doing Shrek 2 tomorrow. So that's for our patrons. And then we have Some Like It Hot and The Spy Who Shagged Me ending out our April over on Patreon. So thank you all so much for listening. Make sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel. Check out the MCU's Bleeding Edge, and we'll see you next week when we talk about – what are the two movies, John? I got to say this. Oh, I butchered it. We're doing Jojo Rabbit and The Great Dictator. Those are our two movies next week. We will see you all for that. I couldn't remember, Jeff.